Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to The Naked Englishman, 7:15 on the 28th of March, 2025. I'm Richard Vopes. This is Audio Diary of My Life. Thank you. And talk to you tomorrow. Oh, no, there is a bit more. I hope you're well. Grey skies at the moment, which is a bit of a bugger. But it will mean that instead of desperately wanting to get outside and sitting into the sun and idling the day away, one will get on with the work. We went to a farm shop, and outrageous as it sounds, and it is outrageous, the people who were testing the raw milk were still testing the raw milk. That's 2 weeks. 2 weeks, ladies and gentlemen, for them to just test and go, yeah, nothing wrong with it. You get on with it, mate. You're doing very well. Please allow them to have raw milk. 2 weeks. They believe, and I hope they're right in their belief, that next week there will be rawest milkus availableus for us. But we shall see. Anyway, so that's the situation there. So I didn't buy a huge amount, because I did buy some meat and what have you. And we're going to be away for a few days shortly, so I don't need the freezer. I don't need the freezer full of freezing stuff at the moment. But anyway, that is the situation, which is annoying. But anyway, I do have one bottle left in the deep freeze. Of raw milk, but I'm just mainly using it for teas and coffees and things. I do like to drink a glass of raw milk every day, if not two or three glasses of raw milk every day, for it does wonders for the old bod. But unfortunately, I can't at the moment. Anyway, so that was that. We sat in the sun exchanging dates in the diary to keep up to date with what we're doing. I must, and I do hope today, to update my journal diary. You know, the journal I keep in long hand, because I've been a bit lax in that recently. So I must do that today, as well as everything else. I cooked leftovers yesterday. You'll be thrilled to know. And then Julia came over with a nice piece of steak and mash, which was very kind. It's like Meals on Wheels, which was lovely. So, very good. Enjoyed that very much. And today I've got two interviews to do. Well, one is on my channel, one is on somebody else's channel. The interview I did yesterday afternoon, bit of a nuisance. Internet issues kept phasing in and out, and I shall need to edit that. But what I thought, I'm going to give it a go. Don't normally do this, but I'm just going to, I don't need to put it out till Saturday. So today, I'm going to edit. I've just uploaded it straight onto YouTube with these sort of interruptions, and then I'm just going to cut them out using the cutting out feature that YouTube offer. Rather than putting it through my system and then saving another file and uploading it, I just thought, oh, sod it. I'll see if I can do that. Because you can clip out bits you don't want, you see? Which is quite handy. Now then, I thought I would just share a little bit from the pipe book from Alfred Dunhill that I was talking to you about yesterday. And I'm on a chapter, I haven't read this yet, called Mound Pipes, chapter 4 in the book. But this is this book, as I said before, it's not quite what I was expecting, because I was hoping it would talk a bit more about briar and tobacco and what have you, and I'm not quite sure where it's going to go, but it does talk about pipes from all over the place. Anyway, Mound Pipes, let me read this bit to you to keep you amused and entertained as you gather around whatever it is you do, as you listen to the Naked Englishman as he flaunts his little... Julia's just suddenly looked at me as if to say, what the hell are you going to say? Mound pipes. Whatever the belief in a future life, I'm going to start that again. Imagine I haven't read to you, and now I'm about to. Wherever the belief in a future life is strong among simple people like me, the custom prevails of burying with the dead such of their personal belongings as they may require in the land of spirits. Such was the custom among Red Indians of North America. I don't think we're supposed to say this, but bear in mind it was written in 1924. And since to this people the pipe was sacred as well as a dear possession, many pipes of antique pattern have been discovered from grave sites. The Indians of the great Algonquin race, which included the Chippewa, Delaware and Shawnee tribes, were accustomed to build over the graves of their dead earth mounds closely resembling the tumuli, with which are a familiar feature in our English chalk hills. And the systematic excavation of these mounds have thrown much light on the earlier Indian arts and crafts, among which pipe making held a conspicuous place. I'm just going to interrupt the text here for one moment to say that we've been offered a workshop of not pipe making, although that would be lovely. I might make a... it's a copper sculptor thing, but I've got a sneaky feeling that I will either make a pipe holder or a pipe ashtray stroke holder if we go on it. We've been given this, gifted this in a workshop for a day. So that sounds really good, doesn't it? A copper workshop. So that's what I think I might do, is try and create something to hold me pipes in, you know. Not like a pipe stand for many of them, but a pipe holder. So the one I'm smoking, when I want to put it down, you know, the current one. So some little holder and then an ashtray built into it or something. I don't know. Anyway, I just thought that was interesting. The... Muscogee Indians, although quite a different race from the Algonquins, were also mound builders, their country being the area now comprising the Gulf States to the north of the Gulf of Mexico. The home country of the Algonquins was originally near the Great Lakes, but they were gradually driven southwards down the Ohio and the Mississippi valleys by the presence of the more northerly tribes, until finally some of them were neighbours of the Muscogee. The consequence is that the older Algonquin, I don't know how you pronounce that, Algonquin, I'm just doing it as the letters form, mounds, are found in the north, e.g. Ohio, where there is the famous Mound City, and newer ones are further south. And is the Ohio mounds that most it is in the Ohio mounds that most of the interesting pipes occur. The old idea that these great burial mounds were the monuments of some civilized non-Indian race, perhaps the ancestors of ancient Mexicans, has been abundantly disproved. They are the work of the Indians who were met with on the discovery of America, and, in particular, of the tribes who practiced systematic agriculture, which was favoured by the soil and climate, one of the more important of the crops being tobacco. The religious observance of the Algonquins included totem worship. That is to say, each clan or subdivision of the tribe held some particular animal to be sacred to it, and in some way to represent the clan. Many legends made the totem the ancestor of the clan, and it served the members as a tribal emblem. I don't know what that was. There was a little click, and the cat is fascinated with it. I think it's a little candle that Julia just lit, just blew up. So we're going to die in a horrible, agonising death, but not today, or ever, actually. Anyway, the Indian craftsmen lavished utmost care on the carving of this totem animal, and it is because these figures, beautifully sculptured in stone, are characteristic of many mound pipes that those possess the great... Anyway, let's not go on to the what is a bloody mound pipe. I want to know what a mound pipe is. Right, so the characteristic shape of the unornamented grave mound pipe is seen in figure 34. Have a look at that. Can you see? and it will be noticed at once that it has no resemblance to any type of pipe met elsewhere. The bowl is mounted on a riband like base. What is a ribbon? Is that ribbon? Maybe it's ribbon like base. And it does, it's like a ribbon, I suppose, a stretch of like a slightly curved base that's narrow, about, I don't know, 2 or 3 centimetres, whatever, for about 10 inches. That doesn't help, does it? So about an inch and a half wide to about 10 inches long. So I've got to go and have a look and see what this candle is doing, because it's making some very strange popping noise. Oh, it's the essence oil that you put in. It's an essence candle, you know, burning essence or whatever. There's a bit of juice in there that's bubbling up. I hadn't noticed. Anyway, the bowl is mounted on this ribbon-like base. It doesn't say ribbon, it says riband. I don't know what that means. Like base, which is curved slightly downwards and come on, turn the page. And projects equally in either direction, the front portion serving for the smoker to hold the pipe, while the back portion is both stem and mouthpiece. Oh, I see how it works. Yes. So, in other words, it's a bit like a pipe. If you can imagine a pipe, I won't read anymore because I think you're totally bored by it. If you can imagine a pipe, right, which is like a ruler. Imagine a ruler, a wooden ruler, you know, 12-inch ruler, but imagine it only 10 inches. And imagine it thicker than a wooden ruler by like 3 wooden rulers together on top of each other, okay? And then slightly bent, slightly curved, okay? Imagine that. And then halfway along, you've got a little pot. And I assume this is made of clay. Your little pot, so like a bowl, you know, but it's like a little pot that's on the top. And from one end of this ruler to the middle, there's a hole in the middle, in the centre, that goes, a flue that goes all the way to the pot. And then the other extension is really the bit you hold. So you hold that up to your mouth by holding it away from you, and you puff on the pipe. I mean, it's basically the same principle as a pipe, of course. But whereas an ordinary pipe has stem, bowl, and then it ends, this is effectively stem, bowl, and then handle protruding forward, if you get my meaning. Anyway, fascinating book, but not what I wanted. So I have to go and look to see if there's another one. If anyone can spy a book which talks about briars and the basics of tobacco, that's what I thought this was, as I've mentioned copious times now. Too many to remember. So that was that, really. But it's annoying when you buy a book and it's not quite what you want. You get a bit disappointed, don't you? And it wasn't cheap, but it wasn't expensive, if you see what I mean. But it's nice to have it on the, you know, put it on display and people go, yeah, look, he's got a pipe book, which really doesn't mean anything. And that's the trouble. Many of the books I've bought, thinking they were one thing, and they turn out to be a bit other. But then later on, you come back to it and you go, oh, actually, I'm enjoying that, and I'm glad I did buy it. So that's the trouble. I wouldn't want to be parted from my books. There's some books I could root out, definitely some. And funnily enough, many of them might be more of the books that's been told about all the terrible times that we're in. But some of the more just lovely books, and I, you know, look at some... There's books here that may not be accurate, but Trevelyan's English Social History, that's a nice book. And it's very detailed, very detailed. And I think social history is a fascinating subject, and that's the sort of book that you can take off the shelf and just open and be absorbed in it. So if I just open this up here, I'll do it at the beginning. Defoe's England. Oh, yes. What do we mean when we say Defoe's England? Well, when a survey is demanded of Queen Anne's England and its everyday life, our thoughts are turned to Daniel Defoe, riding solitary and observant through the countryside. And I have got his book, in which he does do that, and I'm looking, scanning. It's on the shelf somewhere over on that side of the room. I know where it is, but can't actually see it from where I'm sitting. Yes, and that's what he did. It was one of his tasks to traverse Britain on such tours of reconnaissance. After his day's journey in the inn of some market town, he wrote his report on local opinion to his employer, Robert Harley, a mystery man like himself and a lover of exact information secretly given. On Sundays, he would attend the dissenters' chapel, observant of his fellow worshippers and inquisitive as to their business affairs. For besides being a trader, he was a nonconformist, not indeed of the type laden with the proverbial conscience, for Defoe could be all things to all men, but a Puritan in his pretence for solid work and homespun to fashionable display. Like Cobbett, who rode and wrote about England 100 years after him, he was a realist and a man of the people, but it was not like his successor, half blinded by rage against the powers that be. And Cobbett was, indeed, half raged about the powers. He talked about the thing all the time. For the Age of Anne was the prelude to a long era of content. And Defoe, more than Swift, was a man of his day. Defoe, the trader, hailed the advent of the era of business prosperity as heartily as Cobbett, the disinherited yeoman, bewailed as rural past. And quite so. Many of us... I've got rural rides as well. Anyway, I just wanted to briefly have a nose at that. I have rural rides as well, which is William Cobbett riding around the countryside, looking at interesting people and bemoaning. And I say quite rightly, bemoaning the state of agriculture as the estates took over and grew and grew. And now, you know, many of us are bemoaning these estates because they're not even doing agriculture. They're doing artificial food or covering agriculture in bloody solar panels or building houses on fertile... Offsetting carbon footprint and all that sort of bollocks. So... Anyway, there we are. That's my little journey into a bit of literature. Can't speak. Don't know what I'm talking about. Made it all up. None of it's true. I'm just a voice in your ear, which you're going to have to turn off in a minute because I'm going to stop speaking and that will upset you. Thank you very much for tuning in, if you did. And if you didn't, well, tune in tomorrow. Be a different show tomorrow. Funny that. Right, I will leave you, Julia will leave you, and you will be bereft for the rest of the day. But there will be something else to cheer you up, I'm sure. Until that time, take care, thanks for listening, goodbye.